It's time for What's Up with Opposition Deputy Leader Paula Bennett.
Ah, but no, it's not. It's Chris Pink. Hi, Chris Pink. How are you? Well, that's what we need to do. Are you there, buddy?
Yes, hello. How are you?
Yeah, good. Very well. How are you, Chris?
Yeah, really good, thanks.
Now, for people who don't know you, you're the Helensville MP?
Yes, sir.
And what's your specialty subject?
Well, I was a lawyer before I came in and entered the Navy, so I'm our courts spokesperson, and I sit on the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Select Committee. So those are my main areas.
Righty-ho. Now, we've got a couple of things to talk about this morning. We're going to talk about the National's new environment policy.
The environment policy? Yeah. So pretty exciting times for us. We had a launch on the weekend, just sort of setting out actually some questions and also some answers as we see them. So it's all about getting ready ahead of the 2020 election and being able to say to New Zealanders, look, we're serious about the environment as well as the economy, which obviously we're probably better known for, and actually that it's not impossible to have a balance between those two. So there's some specific stuff in there that we're hoping will provide some good reaction and a bit of a steer for where we need to go ahead of next year and beyond.
So this blue-green policy, that's Simon Bridges' words, isn't it? Sort of a blue-green policy, is that right?
Yeah, well, actually, the phrase blue-green is part of it. Well, it's sort of an organisation within the organisation for over 20 years, actually, that the group within National sort of been pushing the environment barrow within our own ranks, which has been good, actually, to keep us to account a bit in terms of that stuff. So, yeah, a policy that reflects that particular interest of some, but actually more to the point, realising that we've all got to understand how the environment does play an important part, obviously, in all our lives, and including the way that we go about ensuring that people can run their businesses, their families can get on well, and so on. So it's all interconnected. So a blue-green policy really means just sort of seeing in that big picture.
So, you haven't taken long. I mean, you chucked the phrase out there sort of as a party not that long ago. So you must be pretty happy with the way it's playing with the voters, the blue-green thing. What's the policy itself sort of, in a nutshell, because we don't have a lot of time, but what's the policy itself, apart from obviously a nod to the existence of an environment? and you're right when you say that you do need to be held account to that, because that's where we all live. What makes it different, and what are some of the extremes that it perhaps doesn't reach that say the others would
yeah, okay,
would go
well
for?
I think the key theme I'd pick out is really just saying, well, we'll go where the science tells us is actually the best kind of policy. So probably a good area to highlight in that is the biotechnology space. So actually being a bit open-minded about possibilities for using technology to sort of, the idea of looking at genes of plants and animals can be a bit scary, but we're sort of saying, well, look, if there's good opportunities there to do things in the space of, for example, predator control, and that's not here, I'm sort of well-versed in, so I won't go there, but, in plants and crops and so on. So let's see where the science gives opportunities, and obviously then weigh that up against risks and costs elsewhere.
Isn't that what everyone, regardless what party, that's what we've all been doing? We've all been following the science up to a point, and now it's... Is there science that's the National Party are disputing, or science they're not happy with?
No, well, I don't think so. No, I think, well, I mean, it's funny to say that about everyone being prepared to look at the science, but I think it was last week that we had the Conservation Minister saying that she wasn't interested in going down the rabbit hole of sort of looking at alternatives. I think
it's a 1080. Is that what you're going to get? Yeah, you're right.
And ironically, if you go down a rabbit hole, then...
dead
rabbits. Probably quite a useful thing to know if you want to get rid of non-native species that are actually destroying the environment in some way. So, yeah, so, we say that we're open-minded and that others aren't necessarily being, but it's more, not sort of really from an opposition point of view, but actually just being open to, having a broader look than we've done in the past, and maybe that broader than some other parties are doing now.
Right, so it'll be a fairly sizable part of the next election, though, for you guys, won't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no one disputes the importance of the environment. Like you said a minute ago, we're all going to live in it. So, it's just a matter of how we do it, really.
Speaking of living in the environment, interesting response from National about not only the capital gains tax, but also the new rental insulation rules. How can Judith Collins come out and say that that's going to be a bummer for landlords, and that just they're going to sell up their rentals because they need to come up to compliance? We've got to live in healthy homes, don't we?
Yeah, of course we've got to live in healthy homes, and that's the starting point, I guess, to acknowledge that. But a little bit care.
But what's the but though? This is
The but is that actually when you increase the cost, basically two sort of options on landlords, assuming that they've sort of done their maths so that they can sort of offer a reasonably competitive proposition for tenants anyway. One is to increase the rent, and actually sadly we've seen that over the last 12 or so months as it is. And I'll just come back to that point in a minute.
My view on it, and tell me if I'm wrong, yeah, is that if they're doing that, then they shouldn't be a landlord, because you know you rent out something, you're renting out a house because you want to make money from it, but you've got to rent it out to someone who can pay the rent. You know, there's not a lot of people who've got outlandish money to spend on rent, because if they did, they'd probably buy a house. You know,
there's
going to be a certain level of the average rental, isn't there? And I just don't see how it's how there's a but. I think that if you can't do that and you can't rent out a place that's up to spec, then you shouldn't be a landlord. Would that be right?
I understand the argument.
Or am I just about to does that collapse the housing market, that argument?
Well, no, I don't think we need to get carried away. But Judith's point's valid, which is to say that if people can't sort of play the game in the way that you've set out, and maybe with a moral dimension as well, I'd like to think that most Kiwis aren't interested in having their tenants live in. Landlord Kiwis aren't interested in having their tenants live in bad conditions.
I'm stunned by how many people I've heard around the town and on the talkback and the stuff saying that, at least I'm giving them somewhere to live. You know, I don't think that's an argument at all.
Yeah, no. Well, I think it's fair if you sort of look at a situation where, there wasn't a requirement for insulation not that long ago. The last government did bring that in, and we think that's a pretty good place to be in terms of saying, well, look, if a place is well insulated, that's a landlord requirement, and then tenants have the ability to heat that themselves. Now, I mean, obviously they're drawing the line in a slightly different place, but to that point you made before about whether landlords will remain in the game or sell up, well, if they do, then there's a side benefit there, and I suppose in the sense that some people who were renting might be able to buy, and that's fine as far as it goes, but some people aren't in a position to be able to buy, and that goes to housing supply, and that's something that...
But the same reason that if there aren't people who are in a position to buy, then if you can't rent out a place and it's safe and sanitary, then you shouldn't be allowed to rent out a place.
Well, I take that, but I mean...
I just don't see the argument there.
Yeah, well, the argument is that insulation goes a long way towards that, and it's a pretty fair split to have the landlords doing that and the tenants providing the actual heating. I don't see the issue there.
All right, so let's talk capital gain tax before we go. Chris, what is the current vibe on capital gains? Because, I mean, last couple of weeks ago it was China. China was the big scary thing, and now it's the capital gains tax.
It's a lot closer to home.
It's a lot easier to manipulate. It's a lot to... The scaremongering's about the same.
Oh, come on. Hey, no, look, it's not scaremongering. What I will say is that there's been a proposal that's been put out there, and it's, I think the technical term is big and hairy chested. So we're obviously looking at all the different implications that might hit people who think that capital gain is sort of taxes just on rich picks, quote unquote.
There's a lot of catchphrases being bandied around in this declaration of war. No one's saying it's a rich pricks tax. No one's saying it's a declaration of war. No one's saying it's hairy chest. I mean, the National Party is saying all those things. convince me that it's such. I mean, there's people saying that the housing market you'll undervalue the housing market. Well, we have to, because the housing market's been so ridiculously inflated over the last 10 years.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's not just connected with the housing market.
I'm just using that as an example, you know.
Yeah, sure, but I mean, they're excluding the family home, so most houses aren't going to fall under it for a start. But just, I'll tell you what, one thing that has been raised a lot with me, and I suppose with my hat on, is the Helensville MP, where there's a lot of people with large blocks of land, and they're not always by choice because there's a minimum lot size. They're going to have the family home rules applying to their properties beyond 1.1 acres, and so they would say, well, why do city dwellers with a more valuable family home, so-called, not have to pay a tax that's going to apply to my bit that's bigger than an arbitrary line on a piece of paper? And how is that fair? And I'll tell you what, I don't have many good answers for them other than just that's what's been proposed, and that we'll push hard against it.
And I mean, would you be satisfied with something like half as much, or just none at all?
Oh, in terms of the numbers, I think the principle's really more important than where the numbers land. I mean, I don't want to sort of get into some sort of reverse auction with you because then I'm going to get myself in trouble.
Yeah, right. Just asking, man, just asking, you know.
Yeah, fair enough to put it out there. But, no, look, I think it's more about understanding the breadth of the tax in terms of, you know, KiwiSaver investments. For those who say, well, I don't own shares, I don't have investments, well, if you do have KiwiSaver, then it'll whack you at least at that point. So that's where the conversation is, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you think that there's an argument for people that have been paying PAYE all their lives, just saying, "Hey, good, someone else has to pay tax on other money that other people have made." You know, like other people have to pay money on, on money that they've made as well.
Yeah, well,
because if you take it from someone who's solely made PAYE tax all their life, and they see someone sell a great big block of land in Helensville, make a mil and a half on it, and don't pay any tax on it, I tell you.
Yeah. Well, no, look, I get that, but at the same time,
Are they wrong? Are they? I mean,
no. Look, I tell you what is. I wasn't going to call you wrong, but what you're missing there is the fact that the guy out in Helensville has paid PAYE or some sort of income tax, and if they're a business owner earning their money, then they've taken the risk along the way as well. And it's from what's left over from that tax, that income tax, that they've bought that land. And then they've had land rates on that. They've had the GST on the land rates. And then if it's their family home, they're going to get whacked in a way that people who live closer into the city aren't. And, you know, it's a clipping of the ticket to the extent where there's no ticket left. And that's the point, you know. It's actually not just about balancing in terms of income, because everyone's been paying income the whole way along. It's an extra. It's not an either-or.
All right, hey Chris, thank you very much for talking to us. Stepping into Paula's boots for the night, for the morning. Sorry, cheers. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you,
Chris Bank from Helensville, National Party representative. Thank you very much.
That was What's Up with Opposition Deputy Leader Paula Bennett.